the Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 327. I'm going to stab you with my sharp wit.
Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of our weekly podcast. Panda!
Yo!
How you doing?
Hi! I feel like I haven't seen you in like forever.
Have you seen me in forever?
No.
Are you sure?
Like, we live together, but it's like we are two ships passing in the night sometimes.
I mean, sometimes my ship goes past your ship.
Yeah.
Sometimes I try to sink your battleship.
And you sometimes win. Which is why I don't challenge you to Connect Four anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you really shouldn't play me in Connect Four.
Connect Four is her shit.
But battleship, you have a chance.
I have really bad chance.
Yeah.
Which is why in all my RPGs, I like to boost up luck. Because my chance in reality sucks balls.
Well, you know, I've learned so much about you in just these short few seconds. We're already off to a really great start in this podcast. Mostly because I got some of my voice back in time for us to actually do this podcast. Because I've been sick most of this week. So, you know, my week was like...
I know, you're sounding kind of mannish over there.
Dude. I mean, just a little bit. Not a lot.
But enough for people to be like, is that really Ninja over there?
I mean, really, at this point, my voice is deep enough that I could do some voiceover work for, like, a tranny character in an anime right now. And be buyable only if the tranny was, like, a young tranny. So there's that. I mean, but I own that about myself right now, so I'll take it. I mean, this is as low as my voice ever gets, people, so enjoy it while you can.
Her bass is down low.
Yeah, this is my best Kathleen Turner. This is about it.
I like Kathleen
Turner. I love Kathleen Turner. She's a fucking pimp. Just saying.
Powerful women with deep voices.
Love it.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, right?
Love it.
I love my deep voice.
Okay. It's good stuff. I'm pretty sure that that's one of the reasons why so many people love the character Jessica Rabbit and who played Roger Rabbit. That and those bodacious tatas.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
So, in talking about that stuff that we typically talk about, which isn't always Jessica Rabbit, although, I gotta say, for a cartoon character, so hot.
I know she's one of my ginger triggers.
Yeah, she is. But, we're here to talk about video games, tech gadgets, and anime.
Are we talking about all those things today?
Well, we're gonna talk about a bunch of those things today. We're probably not gonna get to all of those things today. But, I'm gonna kick it off with... one of the things that's kind of been on my mind, and we didn't really get to talk about it the last time we gathered together to do this thing, but, you know, Sony is having an event. They're making some kind of announcement.
Announcements, announcements, announcements.
On February 20th, you know, so in a couple of days. And there's all kinds of conjecture about what that announcement is. Almost everyone in the industry is absolutely sure that they're going to make their announcement about a PlayStation 4 on the 20th. And I don't know that that's the case.
I don't think, I mean, if I were Sony, like, hey, this is Panda acting as Sony. If I had something that big, I would wait to drop it during a bigger trade event. I wouldn't drop it now.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So the announcement that they're having, which the website is, at least for US, is us.playstation.com/meeting2013. It's being broadcast video-wise, so they're going to have a live event. Which means, you know, the entire world could tune into it. Very much like if they were doing a media broadcast of their keynote briefing at E3, which they also, just like Microsoft and Nintendo, broadcast live on the web and stream through PSN for customers that aren't able to go out to the event or to see it live. So as far as being able to reach people and have a major announcement, they could absolutely do it this way. But I don't know that it necessarily makes sense for Sony to announce a PS4 outside of an E3 when you're, you know, just months away from E3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're sitting here and we're in February right now. You know, E3 is what, 5 months away?
Or, I mean, I guess. I'm not paying that much attention since I'm not going this year.
All right, 4 months. Okay, it's 4 months away. Why on earth would you...
See, my next time going to pack E3 is a year and 4 months away.
It's okay, Panda. Don't worry about it. It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. We don't know what, you know, June is going to bring yet, okay? But what here's what I'm saying is... If Sony makes the announcement on February 20th that, yes, in fact, they are working on a PS4, but no, they're not going to have it at E3 or give you a first look at it at E3 or tell you exactly when it's coming out, but they're roadmapping it for, you know, 2 more years because they think that's how much longer they can get out of the PlayStation 3, then that would put a bit of a damper on me as a journalist going to E3, because in the back of my mind, everything I'm looking at, I know, okay, is going to be obsolete for Sony in 2 years because they are working on a new device and I'm not going to be as interested in what you have to show me. I'm going to be trying to worm somebody to have the drink that they're not supposed to and say something that they're not supposed to give me hints about this new device that's coming down the pike. Now, Sony says that what they're going to announce on the 20th is really important for the industry.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what that means. You know, that's so vague.
Maybe they're quitting.
That could be a new console. That could be the announcement that they're getting out of the mobile, you know, gaming.
They're probably getting rid of the PSV and the Vita.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, I think that it's more like them because they have not had the success with the Vita that they wanted. They've had a bunch of hardware issues with the Vita that were unexpected. They've lost a significant amount of money. I think that it's more apt for them to say that they're either going back to the drawing board with the Vita or they're changing the pricing structure or they're changing how the Vita interacts with or will interact with the PlayStation 3 moving forward. Or they're announcing some more cross-compatibility gaming things that are going to open up for the platform. I think that that may be more likely than a PS4 announcement. But I could be completely wrong. I mean, Sony may have, in their infinite wisdom, decided, no, we're going to do this now. Because this makes a lot more sense for us to do this now. But I just don't feel like February 20th makes sense to announce a PS4. Like, if you really want to get the world stage to kind of be that push, that hype machine, it makes more sense to do that when you have the leading media and journalists all gathered in a room where they can't get away from it and they're looking at it and they can touch it.
I want to touch it.
You know, so I'm really curious to see what this announcement is on the 20th, but I'll be really surprised if it's about a PS4.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would save the big bang for a big bang occasion, like a moment.
I mean, you've got PAX East, which, you know, typically Sony doesn't come to enforce, but you could. And, you know, that's just a couple of weeks after this 20th announcement. So I think that it's more likely that you'll hear them talk about their current roadmap for hardware that they have, and they'll allude to saying, yes, we are, you know, looking at the future and what that holds for us, and that it will in some way take advantage of the 4K TVs that they are wanting to sell that they announced at CES. But I just don't know if it's a PS4. I don't know that I'm ready for a PS4.
I'm not, because I've just started going back to playing games on my PS3.
Well, and again, you know, we've talked about this before of, you know, games really pushing the PS3 to to its capacity and what that roadmap for the future looks like. Like, I just don't feel that anybody's clamoring for a new PlayStation system. Like, I don't feel like my system is tired. You know how you get to a point with a console where you're like, yes, okay, I have played every game that I ever want to play on this system. I've replayed all the games I want to play. Like, there's nothing new coming on the platform. It's time to move on to that next thing, and that next thing is either a completely different platform that I haven't been exposed to before yet, or just in time they've released an update to the system. Like, I feel that that's what happened with me with the Wii U. Like, I got to a point where I was like, okay, the novelty of the motion thing is worn off, and, you know, I'm pretty much playing the same games over and over again. They're just, you know, from different companies, but it's not really doing anything new for me. So I got off the platform and went back to my Xbox and my PlayStation, Xbox more than anything else. And then they announced the Wii U and the new gameplay mechanics and the possibilities there. I was like, okay, it's time to go back to Nintendo, because there's some really interesting things that you could do now with Mario. Like, I'm so excited for the next Mario Galaxy game, and you know it's coming.
Yep.
You know it's coming.
Yes, I do.
And I can't wait to play that on my Wii U.
See, but I think this longevity of a console and, you know, the idea and the concept of that, I mean, yeah, you've gone from a Wii, got your fill for that, went back to your consoles, went back to your Wii U. But, I mean, I don't think you've played much of your Wii U since you got yours. And I don't have one yet, so obviously I can't speak for myself.
I do a lot of things in Nintendo Land. I actually really enjoy Nintendo Land.
Okay, because like I said, the last few times I've been down here hanging out, you've been playing DLC.
Yeah, because a lot of my new titles, and it's just a habit for me, really, because the Nintendo system really hasn't been part of my sphere of when I'm getting ready to buy a game, thinking that the game is available on the Wii.
You're not thinking about, oh, I should see if it's available for the Wii U. You're going for your
for what I know, for what I've been doing.
Yeah, you're steadfast. You're constant.
Well, it's not even steadfast or constant. It's just the habit. It's what I've been playing. Really, the games that I enjoy playing, I haven't played them on my Xbox or my PS3 if they were exclusive to PS3, because that's what they were available on. Like, I didn't have a lot of the game titles that I enjoy playing available for the Wii. So unless it was a Nintendo exclusive game, I've never thought about, oh, well, I'll get it on the Wii if it was available for all three. If it was available for all three, I always went, okay, well, I'll get it on the Xbox because, one, I've got the multiplayer there if it has a multiplayer aspect, so it's easy for me to pick up and play with my friends.
What
two,
friends?
Shut up. I have a couple of friends on Xbox. You're not the only person I know, Panda. Stop being a douche.
Sorry.
Why are you being mean to me?
Sorry.
I'm just getting over being sick. You're supposed to be nice and supportive.
Sorry, bro.
Instead of being a douche.
I'm sorry.
It's like, that was uncalled for.
I am apologizing. I've like apologized 18 billion times right now.
I know, but I'm going to make you apologize like 5 more times.
I'm sorry.
One more.
Sorry.
Thank you. But no, like, I do. I have some people that I play just music games with. Rock Band and DJ Hero and stuff like that. I have some people that I just play multiplayer shooters with, and it's a small group. They're not always on because, like me, they're working professionals, so they don't always have, like, a lot of time to play. I think the last time that I played with my group in Modern Warfare was, like, over a month ago.
Holy shit.
One of them is a mom, so she's got kids. So if
babies,
she's doing stuff with the kids, you know, you got to do stuff with the kids. And the kids can't be, you know, playing Modern Warfare, watching mommy play Modern Warfare. Like, I get that, which is cool. I love the fact that she's a mom and, you know, plays Modern Warfare when she can. But for the most part, it's just when I think about, so as the example, we got Tomb Raider getting ready to drop, right?
Yep.
March 5th, right?
Yep.
Okay.
First week.
When I went in to reserve my copy, it didn't even dawn on me to go, oh, that's probably going to be on the Wii U. You might want to try it on the Wii U. Like, it came flying out of my mouth because the guy was like, oh, you're going to reserve that for the PS3s too? And I was like, no, actually, I want that on the Xbox. He's like, I'm glad I asked that question. I'm like, I'm glad.
See, every time I go to our local GameStop,
yep,
when I'm picking up a title that I haven't reserved, they always remind me. It's like, well, we have it on this, like, they always give me the option. I'm like, oh, man, You know, but I'm always thinking either between my Xbox and my PS3 because I haven't touched my Wii since, like, 1998.
This is what I'm saying. It's habit. It's not that it's the steadfast. It's not that it's
And guys, I know the Wii came out well before 1998. It's called a joke. Just in case, because I know there's some haters who be like, Panda, the Wii didn't come out in 1998. And I'm like, yeah, doofus, I know.
All right.
Sorry. Anyway. I'm testy.
No kidding.
Sorry,
bro. You're kind of a douche today. Do you need a Snickers?
I'm a little hangry right now.
Do you want to take a moment?
Nah, I'm good.
Get some food?
I'm good. I'm so good.
All right. Anyway, don't stab me. I mean,
I ain't got nothing to stab you with, bro.
There are pens.
Except for my sharp words. My cunning wit.
Something like that.
So, whoa.
Anyway. But it didn't even dawn on me to go, no, let me try Tomb Raider on the Wii U. And even when the guy was like, yeah, because we're going to have it on this, this, and this. And I was like, yeah, it's still going to get on my Xbox. And it's not because I don't enjoy gaming on my Wii U, because I do. It's just habit. And the habits that are learned habits are hard ones to break. It's almost Pavlovian, you know? So, I mean, I'm interested in seeing what the announcement is going to be. I mean, I'm going to be watching it like a hawk. When the meeting starts, like a lot of people, I'm probably going to be live tweeting it. If you want to find out exactly what I think about it, then make sure to watch the Land of Esh, at ESH News feed on Twitter on the 20th. Cause we'll be chiming in, as we watch it, on what the heck is actually happening there.
We are?
Yeah.
Oh.
We are.
We are, we are.
Yeah, you know.
Live tweeting, we are.
We'll have internet, so we'll be watching and tweeting, or we'll be watching and I'll be tweeting. I have no problem running the Twitters. I like to run the Twitters.
I'ma be watching.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if Sony makes me completely wrong, I'll be happy with that, because I'm curious to know, you know, what the next thing for Sony is when it comes to consoles, because I feel like Sony has had a lot of bumps and not a whole lot of wins. You know, every new great game that's come out, and you could argue this with me if you want to, but you won't win. But I think Assassin's...
I don't feel like arguing anyway.
I think Assassin's 3 is one of the best games that I've ever played.
Bitch say huh?
Assassin's Creed 3.
Bitch say huh?
You heard me.
With all them bugs.
Okay. Once the bugs were fixed, and there were two major bugs. Both were fixed within the first 2 weeks that the game released. Okay, the gun thing doesn't happen now. But once you get past that, as far as depth, as far as all the things you could do, the story, the characters, the replay value, Assassin's Creed 3 was one of the best games that I've ever played. Okay, and the reason I say that is even with the bugs, Panda, I didn't give up. I played through and figured
Goonies
it out.
Goonies never say die!
And the game made me want to do that. That's the hallmark of a great game. Because you can have just completely game-breaking bugs that make you, you know, throw the game out the fucking window and want to get your money back. We've all been there. But if you have a game that getting through the experience is worth it to you so much that you put up with a bug... Like, not being able to actually...
Yeah, that does speak to the character of the game.
Okay.
I will give you that.
So, what I'm saying is, overall, of all the games that I've played on new generation console systems, Assassin's 3, and really the whole trilogy that's not a trilogy, of games, has been one of the most enjoyable experiences that I've had on a new console. It is second only to the God of War experience. Okay.
All right.
Now, with that being said, Sony released Assassin's 3 with a hardware bundle, so you could get a special version of the hardware plus the game. So, you know, there's a lot of manufacturing involved in changing that color of the hardware and bundling things like that, and you have to kind of bank that there'll be a certain amount of people that will want that bundle. Well, you're still talking about chunking down, you know, $300 and some odd. And I feel like they've already saturated the market with the people that are going to have a PS3 probably at this point have a PS3.
Yes.
So I'm not going to go out of my way to buy a new PS3 just because it's blue.
See, but there are some collectors, hardcore collectors,
who But hardcore don't... collectors are not going to buy $50,000 worth of new hardware.
True that.
Okay, they're just not. And that doesn't cover your manufacturing costs and your shipping costs. So I just feel like some of these hardware bundles that they've been doing that are specially decorated...
Have gone to no avail?
Are part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Oh. Okay.
You know, Sony has not been as successful in the last couple of years when it comes to SCEA, the Sony Computer Entertainment America branch, as they have in other years. You know, there was a big chunk of time where Sony, like Nintendo, was just making money hand over fist.
Yep.
I refer to those days as the PlayStation 2 days.
Ooh.
Before you started getting Super Slims and Ultra Slims and...
I still have my baby PS2.
You know.
And my fatty. He just doesn't work.
And then they entered into markets that, frankly, I don't think they belonged in. You know, there's a good reason why there is no Microsoft mobile gaming handheld system.
Because they know not to compete with the Nintendo?
Because they know that it will take way too much time, effort, and money to really compete with Nintendo. Where Nintendo itself is now having to compete with mobile personal devices. You know, between...
Yeah, Nintendo now has to compete with smartphones.
Smartphones and tablets. You know, there's... It is so saturated that there's not an easy way to be king of the hill anymore. So, it's just a hill that they've chosen not to scale. And I feel like Sony should be smart and realize that maybe this is not a...
It's not an avenue they really should be
I mean, spending a lot of time. You remember the mini disc, right?
The UMD crap stuff?
No, the mini disc. Remember the black and red mini disc player that I gave you?
It was blue. It wasn't black.
No, it was red and black.
No, it was red and blue.
Trust me.
Because it was blue.
I will put...
In my mind, it is blue and forever it shall be blue.
It's not blue. It was black.
I still have it.
I know. And we can go and get it. And if you colored it blue, that's one thing.
I could have easily done that.
But when I bought it, it was black and red.
Well, it's blue now.
Okay. And that sucker...
I love that thing.
...was supposed to be the MP3 player killer.
And it wasn't. But I still have I have one... small disc that still has some awesome music on it.
You know,
to this day, I still have it.
But that's the thing. You know, Sony has a lot of great ideas, and they have a lot of really amazing-looking designs and concepts, but when it comes down to the hardware and the functionality, you know, they've had a few successes that have really kind of gotten the job done. And I just feel like the Vita isn't one of those successes. And so at some point...
The PSP wasn't a triumph. So the fact that they went to a Vita They should never have gone the route.
I mean, you evolve the PSP to be digital, and then because it's digital only and it doesn't have UMD support, you alienate the offices that do have it. Because I do have a PSP. I have my original PSP.
So all those fans who believed in UMD and bought their movies that they wanted to watch on their PSPs can now only watch them on their PSPs because the Vita is not UMD accessible.
Okay, and then you had the PSP Go, which was
it went go away.
You know, I feel like at some point Sony has to go, you know what, we just are not having success at cracking this mobile.
They keep stabbing themselves and.
You got to go back to what you know and what you do well.
Yeah.
And I feel like...
They should cut their losses.
The PlayStation console...
Is your bread and butter.
Is the bread and butter. And that's
because
where the focus
needs to be
put.
3D wasn't it either.
And I'm so glad that that's finally
so take your resources out of 3D TVs, take it out of your whole mobile unit, and take those resources and really hone your console. Because that's your breadwinner. That's your cash cow right there.
So, you know...
I mean, what do I know? I'm just, you know, a voice among millions of voices. What do I know?
Tune in on the 20th, us.playstation.com/meeting2013. Tune in with us And, you know, feel free to tweet at us what you think and what your predictions are. And we'll share stuff on our Facebook page, too. And there'll surely be stuff written on our EGMnow.com page of our opinions of whatever the announcement turns out to be. I'm excited to see what it is. I really am, because I'm very curious. You know, they haven't really done any other leaks or hints to what it is. There are all kinds of photos that are surfacing on the net of a controller that everyone thinks to be a prototype for the controller for the new system, and it looks like a real big DualShock controller, but it's got touch analog pads, and you know, that could be very cool if it is in fact the controller, or at least the prototype for the controller, that it's touch sensitive. Could be very interesting, but it could also make for a whole lot of rage quitting.
It could make for a whole lot of trouble.
It really could. So tune in with us again February 20th, and we'll see what Sony has to say. It should be interesting. So the only other thing that I've got is, we need to talk about Tomb Raider because it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about something before that.
Yeah, because it comes out in 2 weeks.
BioShock Infinite.
Yeah.
Now, I've been running my mouth forever and a day about BioShock Infinite and how, while I probably am not going to play it, I'm going to enjoy the Jesus out of watching Panda play it.
Yep, because I am. I'm playing it.
Because BioShock really and truly is more a Panda game than it is a ninja game, in that I love the story. I love the visuals. The gameplay mechanics are very strong in the BioShock games. But the only one that I came close to finishing was 2. And the only reason why I came close to finishing 2 is because I found the shooting mechanic to be a little bit easier than 1.
Well, obviously.
But even at that, it was still a little bit troublesome for me. To be honest,
I can. That's all right. No one's gonna judge you for telling the truth.
And so I
always tell the tea.
I just finally got to a point where I couldn't get myself out of it, mostly because I didn't have enough of the right supplies, and I really didn't want to go back and restart the level before in order to get back to the level that I was at and have the right things. So that kind of ended my run unto. But I'm floored by how just amazing Infinite looks. And I know this one is one that you're excited about, Panda.
I'm equally excited and terrified because, and I mean, going into BioShock, okay, you're underwater. I'm a Cancer. Water doesn't tend to phase me too much. But as I've stated several times on this show, I am terrified of heights.
Yeah, heights are not her thing.
And the funny thing is, you know, in a game where you know that, oh god, if you fell off a building, you know, you die, you come back, hopefully, if you've got extra lives. But now that games are becoming more and more realistic, I'm getting my fear of heights in games now. Because they're really bringing it forward to my consciousness. You know, because I'm getting that immersed in the universe that I feel that I'm that far up. And with the fact that, what is it, what are they calling it? I think Columbus City or
Columbia.
Columbia up in the sky, like an accumular, you know, Columbus cloud, Nimbus cloud, whatever fucking clouds the city's in.
Cumulonimbus.
Yeah, and you're right. It's visually so appealing, but it's stunning. Also terrifying to those of us who don't like the idea
because it's so photorealistic.
It's like, hey, we're so far up that you can't see the ground. The concept of even feeling the ground when you hit it and die is a pipe dream that you will never, ever reach. You'll die before you even hit the ground.
Well, I mean, in the trailer where you're using the skyhook and Elizabeth is falling and you have to catch her.
Yeah,
and
fuck that noise.
And the perspective is the first-person perspective because it is an FPS game at its core.
Yep.
With RPG elements. But as you are falling through the clouds to try and get to her, I got a sense of vertigo, and I was sitting
in a... And not the U2 vertigo, by the way.
And I'm just sitting in a chair in my office watching this trailer, and I don't even have a controller in my hand that's rumbling, and you know when that scene happens, You know that if you have
that's,
this...
That's going to be a QTE from hell.
You know that that shit's going to be rumbling in your hands so heavy...
Yeah.
That you're really and truly going to feel part of the experience.
Which is exactly what they're going for. So, I mean, yes, I am super eager to see if I can overcome my personal phobias of height and falling, which I think a lot of people share in those phobias. A lot of people have fear of falling from things and not having that control, which is, that says a lot about me, actually, in reality. But I can't wait to overcome them because the story is so worth it already. From the two trailers that we've happened to see, where obviously Irrational Games likes to poke fun at, you know, the past a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that one. That one brought me back to PSA days.
Well, it's not so much that they're poking fun, it's that they're really paying homage
to it.
You know, doing the as I like to refer to it, the 1968 science PSA clip that you ended up having to watch during homeroom when the teacher really didn't have anything planned to teach you, so they would wheel in a TV and make you watch stuff like old episodes of 3-2-1 Contact.
I remember 3-2-1 Contact!
Yeah. So remember when they'd have those breakdowns where they'd have like a science minute?
Yep.
And it'd be like this really old, you could tell that it was like filmed on real film that they converted. that they converted to VHS and it just didn't look right, and like
Betamax.
The audio was like out of time, and somebody got a beta copy that they tried to make VHS, and it was like all anamorphically wrong and shit. That's what a couple of the videos that they've put out, the supplemental ones, which are what are they calling those? The Wings of Icarus?
Yeah.
Series that they're done really well. You know, the eye, as far as detail and the attention to what seems like a real trivial thing, at the end I find that those are the things that make the experience. And it seems to me like the extra time that Infinite has taken on Infinite, I feel is gonna pay off just from the few things that they've been sharing. When it comes to the videos, the latest trailer that they posted up on their site, which we'll put a link in the notes on the podcast for you, so you can go right to it. But I don't know. I feel like even though it has the banner of BioShock in front of it,
I think Infinite's gonna play into a
it
big
feels
chunk
different.
Of because. I mean, BioShock, yeah, okay, we're dealing with, you know...
It's steampunk. Like, to me, that's kind of what the BioShock name screams right up front. It's going to be steampunky because it's going to...
Steampunky, terror, action-adventure, first person.
Okay, that's what it kind of says. But I feel like, you know, even... It's not just the fact that the city is different. You know, you're dealing with Columbia being up in the sky as opposed to Rapture being down below, you know, the sea. And so, right there, you have a difference. But I feel like Rapture was always dark.
Yes. You know,
and that lent to some of
the atmosphere.
And the atmosphere.
It made it dense, and it made put
and
you on edge, because and you were dealing in the dark and unknown.
But you expect to have a fear of dark and unknown. And I feel that part of the reason why Infinite looks... and already feels so much different for me is it's in the sky.
With the sun.
The sun is always shining in Columbia. It's never dark. And so there's no place to, like, hide whatever evil and fight is going to happen.
The evil is right there in front of your face at all times.
And that, I think, adds a completely different scare mechanic to the whole mix. And
well, that's the thing. I think they want to play with the concept of fear not being... derived from an atmosphere, because this is a happy-looking, warm environment, and it is an embodiment of fear and unsettledness and, you know, things of a disturbing nature. So, I love the offset. I love that, because you can't take comfort in the sun anymore, because it's not there
to
save you.
The sun's not safe.
The sun is not safe. Just like in the Icarus story, the sun wasn't safe. He got too close to what happened. His wings melted and he fell and died? Yep. So yeah, they're setting this up for.
I think it's going to be epic, guys. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, and I look forward to playing it and sharing my thoughts and emotions of terror and unpleasantness with all of you, which we all know I'm going to.
Oh yes.
So yeah, I'm pretty pumped for that, and I know you're pretty pumped for that, and I think Eshmom is probably going to end up watching me play that.
Oh yeah, she is going to end up watching.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, though, that means that you're going to have to bring the Xbox down.
Oh yeah, because if I didn't,
you got a hookup for it though. Now
I know I could. I mean, I can always just get it for the PS3. Though, so I could get... Yeah. Whatever. We'll figure it out.
The copy that's coming in is on the Xbox.
Damn it.
Yikes. So, if you want to play it for free, you're going to have to play it for the Xbox.
Yeah, I'm going to have to bring my console down.
If you want to come up out of pocket...
I mean, I made money now, so I could, but why buy it when I can play it for free?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
All right, dog. You got me. You got me.
Just saying. So did you finish one or two when it comes to Bioshock?
I finished two faster than I finished one. And I played two before I played one. But I had a lot of friends who were all playing one at the same time. And would all talk about it. So I knew what was going on in one, even though I wasn't playing it. And then I played two and went back to one. So I know what went on in Rapture. And... I don't know how... I'm hoping not to go through Bioshock Infinite very fast. Because, I mean, we are dealing with a whole new can of beans and worms and rice.
Well, you have new weapons. You know...
You got the sky.
You know, so you have the sky hook that allows you to traverse zip lines, which is going to be really important in the game.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm going to have to practice so much. It's gonna be a hoot and a half. But I really like what they're doing with it.
And well, what did you enjoy about 2? I mean, what made you really want to finish 2?
In all honesty, the reason why I was more drawn to 2 than 1 was, I mean, when everyone was talking about 1 and, you know, oh yeah, you gotta fight the big daddies, you know, and, you know, that was the big threat. I really love the fact that in Bioshock 2, you were a big daddy. And you weren't even a big daddy, you were like... The Big Daddy. Like, a really important Big Daddy. Like, one that could revolutionize Big Daddies, essentially. And I liked the idea that they were willing to let the protagonist be, essentially, the former antagonist. And I liked the flip of perspective in the story.
Okay.
Because, I mean, in Bioshock 1, you were scared shitless when you knew you had to take on a Big Daddy.
Dude... When I first started descending into Rapture after the plane crash, I was like, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be good. As I'm hearing the screeches and things, you know, jumping on to the bubble thing that I was in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And having to watch that just come at me and there's absolutely nothing
you could do.
I was like, oh, you people are just going to fuck with my head this whole game.
Oh, yeah, that's what Irrational does. So, I mean, but I like... companies that really, they develop a world and then they really want you to explore pretty much every aspect there is. So yeah, big daddies are bad, but are they really? And now when you get the perspective of being a big daddy and you kind of understand what's going on in that, there you don't feel that they are as bad as you do initially. Okay. Because there's motivations there that obviously we wouldn't know being human and not... a big daddy. So that's what really drew me to Bioshock 2 was the flip of perspective. And I mean, now going into Infinite, which is another completely alternate perspective, I'm curious to see what they'll do with what will happen after Infinite. Like, I really am really curious about that. Because I mean, we've got this mercenary guy coming to save bitch what's her name?
Elizabeth.
Who apparently is some ultimate power key to something. Which is why you go there in the first place. But I'm curious to go, alright, so after we save this bitch, because, you know, obviously, in this game, you possibly will or won't. I mean, this game could go one of two ways. But I'd like to know what the next perspective after that's going to be, because Columbia is way too big already for them to do this one-shot adventure and not have us go back there.
Already. I mean, think about it. You did two adventures in Rapture.
So right. So how could you not easily do two, possibly even three, depending on how fleshed out Columbia as its own entity is.
Right.
And I mean, I really, really, and I like the colonial play that they're playing with in Columbia, with the drone-ish thing kind of looking like President Washington. And I really am curious to see why that looks the way that it looks and why Columbia seems to operate in a manner very similar to something that we've all learned about. Which is so, it's so interesting. I'm salivating over the thought of it. And that might also be because I'm hungry. But
I mean, part of that is definitely going to be because you're hungry.
Yeah. But I seriously can't wait. And I hope you guys are planning to go on this journey with me. Because I'm going to need a lot of hugs.
And backup.
And backup.
Backup's always important.
Yeah. But yeah. So, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Yay, BioShock! Golf clap!
February 26th, it's right around the corner.
Yep, literally. A week from today.
Literally right around
the corner. It's saying, hey girl, hey!
Hey!
So, hey, Ninja.
Yes?
I've noticed you've been watching a little bit more anime than usual.
I've been watching a ton more anime than usual.
Oh?
Yes.
Well, are you going to share some of that with us today?
Sure. So, I have been pretty much just pillaging every anime, streaming anime source, legitimate ones, obviously, because I like to do things that are legal.
No, I'm just kidding.
Shut up. And so, I started watching quite a few series last week and was marathoning them, you know, between being snowed in and being sick.
Snowmageddon or Snownick. 2013.
Being stuck in the Snownick, there really wasn't a whole lot that I could do. And then, of course, I got sick, so I was down from being that. So it gave me a lot of time to sleep, and when I wasn't sleeping, to lay down. And when laying down, what do? You watch some streaming medias, because you're laying down. You're not going anywhere. You need to be entertained.
Well, I mean, you're watching streaming medias if you still have your power and internet.
Which we did.
Thank gosh!
Uninterrupted power sources. Yay!
Yay!
So, I've been watching quite a few, like I said, and between Funimation's app, Crunchyroll, and the Anime Network's app on my mobile device, which I love that all three of them work with AirPlay, so I can play them on my big TV. Just makes it really nice to kind of sit down and go, play episode, and lay down and be good and not have to move and deal with a remote or anything like that. So it's been wonderful. But the series that I want to talk about today, I actually started on the last day that I was sick, and I've just been so drawn into it that I've been marathoning wherever I can, a few episodes at a time, to get through it. So the series is called Shangri-La, and it's based off of a novel that was then turned into an anime series and released in 2009. The original light novel was done by Kenichi Yoshida and was published in New Type. Remember New Type?
I remember New Type.
Yeah, it was good.
I always had a dream that I'd write for them, but then they died.
I kind of wanted to desperately work for New Type USA, and that didn't happen. But that's okay. So Shangri-La is basically, the story is you have two classes of people. Some bad things have happened. A massive earth-shattering earthquake.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Oh, no, seriously. It was a big quake. It destroyed Japan.
Oh.
I mean, and all kinds of parts of the world. And as such, the entire infrastructure of the world had to be reimagined. And so it went from being a economic system based off of money, printed money, to one that... now indexed off of carbon. So a country's tax rate fluctuates based off of the amount of carbon that they put out into the world. So you put out too much carbon, and all of a sudden your money ain't worth shit because of how heavily it's taxed and devalued.
Holy crap. Okay.
And so this great quake brought along with it all kinds of changes to the ecosystem. Like hailstorms, when they happen now, everyone has to take shelter because it's basically a bombarding rain. And so,
is it like razor hail from Gears of War?
No, well, kind of. There are pieces that will fall as shards that would, you know, sever an arm. But most of the hail balls are so big and so dense that if they hit your skull, they'll crack your neck and your skull, and you'll die.
Oh,
so it's,
did they show that as an example?
Yeah, there's a couple of people that get hit by hail balls. It's not cool.
Oh, I bet it isn't.
So sirens go off and everyone has to seek shelter because if you don't, you're gonna die.
You're gonna die.
It's not going to be good. And
well,
so
I've never
known
death to be
there
good.
There are two classes in Japan, which is kind of the beacon for restructure. And they were the ones that came up with the carbon index system.
Uh-huh.
There's a tower that's been built called Atlas. And Atlas was designed after the Great Quake to be quake-proof and nature-proof and be the new home for all of the country of Japan. They started first with letting several groups into Atlas, because Atlas has multiple layers. I think there's something like 10 or 12 rings in the Tower of Atlas. And they have slowly been bringing refugees who still live out in native Japan into Atlas. So there's a lottery that's held where people who live out in the land, one person is chosen like every month to be brought into Atlas and start life again in Atlas. So that they get out of the bombarding rains and snows and things like that. Well, there's a group, which many in Atlas consider to be a terrorist group, but they
terrorism
want to, you know, take care of their people. And so they're more of a revolutionary group, if you will, called Metal Age, who hijacks a lot of things that are being brought into Atlas so that people can have, like, food and clean water and clean cloth.
How dare they?
Clothes.
How dare
they? And stuff. And so you have
appalled.
A class war, and you have these three kids that somehow play a role in Atlas, but you're not exactly sure.
Uh-huh.
There's this shrew of a woman who is the prime minister, through who other shenanigans ends up being the leader of Atlas, who basically is just a sadist.
They just like to sprinkle those in animes,
yeah,
as of late.
Yeah, she has no regard for human life whatsoever, and likes killing and torturing people and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, she's in a leadership role, so that doesn't really work out well for a whole lot of people.
But I bet for that small few, it's the cat's meow.
For a few. For your shits and your giggles in this series, because it does have a lot of serious overtones. There are three kids who are kind of the key to Atlas, and as you go along in the series, you learn that one of them is going to be the heir of Atlas and take over the mantle and basically be able to do with Atlas what they please.
Meow. Sorry.
The shrew of a woman whose name is Ryoko.
Of course.
She does not want that at all. And basically wants Atlas to be her plaything. And goes about making sure that that happens. You have these Neo Guild members who they basically are raiders of the carbon-based index system, so they're just making money. They're like the Wall Street guys, except they're all kids. All of them. The three of them. And so they've created a virus that helps them go in and manipulate the carbon market so they can make a country whose carbon index is over 1.1 is the limit where you can have decent taxes. Anything over that, you can bankrupt an entire nation in like 30 seconds. They've created a virus that allows them to basically manipulate the carbon markets. So
they're like the carbon market Robin Hood?
Yeah, basically. Except they make you pay them a whole lot of money to make your carbon problems go away.
Okay, so it's Robin Hood with a profit.
Yeah, but they don't give to the poor. They just keep it for themselves.
Oh.
So they're just Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're Robin in the hood.
Well, they're robbing...
Like Robin the Hoods.
They're robbing the Hoods. That's basically what you can do there. But you have these three characters and that are pivotal, and they all come from different walks of life in the Middle Age group, in the Atlas group, and in... I will call her for right now the Shrine Maiden group, but
of course,
Kuniko Hojo is one of the lead characters in the anime, and she's one of the keys, possible heirs for Atlas, though she doesn't learn that until later on, but she's got pink hair, and she's really gregarious, and
gregarious.
What's cool about her is that she's also super physical and athletic.
And physical.
Reluctantly physical. Ends up being the leader of Metal Age. And everyone always calls her
Littlefoot.
The Sun.
Oh.
My
name is better.
Mikuni, who is one of the other possible heirs to Atlas, and she is treated very much like a shrine maiden. She's referred to as the moon. And she is susceptible to light. So she has never been outside.
Is she ghostly pale?
She is ghostly pale. She has two different color eyes. And she speaks in traditional tones, not common tones. So,
so she very talks familiar, of high society, very familiar,
No, she talks more of, like, old English, thous and doths, and even
your
though she's only,
does
like,
stink it,
eight.
Sir.
Yeah.
Kindly remove it and wash it.
Yes, she can't be in the sunlight, and she has the ability to see through lies, and so she asks questions all the time in earnest, and if you lie to her, she... uses basically telekinesis to fold your body into itself, so you die.
Oh, instantly.
Yeah,
so
instantly.
So if she asks you if you ate her donut, and you did, you better say yes.
Correct. As long as you don't lie, you're fine. But if you lie...
But what if you're like...
You crumple. No. There's no gray area. If you lie,
you die.
That's it.
Oh, I would have been dead.
Yeah. As long as you tell the truth, you're fine. But if you lie, you die. And then the third possible heir is a kid named Kunihito Kusanagi. And he is in the military for Atlas. And he struggles with a lot of the orders that he's given because they're contrary to his own personal beliefs. But he wants to desperately protect Atlas and all of the people of the nation of Japan, so he follows orders up into a point where they don't make sense anymore.
Uh-huh.
Now, the way that you're able to tell that these three characters are important, it's established really early in the series, because they all have a dagger that looks identical to each other's. And they don't know this because they're all from different parts.
Places. They're scattered.
And different places. But Kuniko's dagger has a sun on it. Part of the reason why she's referred to as the sun.
The sun.
And Mikuni's has a crescent moon on it. And you don't get to see the symbol that's on Kunihito's dagger until later on in the series. But you find out that his symbol is the land.
I was about to say, I was like, the sun, the moon, and I was going to say the earth.
Yep, exactly. And so these three kids somehow will come to basically decide what the future of Atlas is going to be and how that affects all of the people that are left outside of Atlas. And so it's really deep at times, and there are moments of levity. You know, the series starts off with Kuniko returning to the city of Duomo, which is basically a refugee city that's been built by people who live outside of Atlas. And she's returning from juvie after being locked up for 2 years. And as you get in later in the series, she ends up going back to juvie, and you learn that the reason why she was in there in the first place was that she was taking the rap for something that a friend of hers did, basically stabbing a guy who took her virginity.
Well, then he deserved it. So he took it.
Yeah, he took
without
it.
Without her permission.
What kind of her permission? Because he made
Kind of.
He led the chick to believe that they were going to have a relationship and they're going to be a future and he's going to take care of her. And then he got it and he's like, yeah, no.
Oh, he a lying son of a bitch.
And so she
stabbed him.
Yeah, messed up, stabbed
him. So she Chicago'd his ass.
She Chicago'd his ass. He lived.
Oh.
But because there was that aggression and a knife was involved, she was supposed to go to juvie, and Kuniko basically took the rap and said that she was the person that stabbed the guy because she knew her friend would not be able to handle going to juvie. And so she feels that she owes Kuniko and ends up going to juvie with her the second time. And they go through all this process, and Ryoko ends up being the warden at the juvie and has changed stuff and has decided that she wants to have some fun and break Kuniko. And it doesn't exactly work, and Kuniko is able to figure out an escape plan, and the other girls that are in the juvie help her. And so as their punishment, after Kuniko and this other girl get out, Ryoko has them all put to death by firing squad.
Oh.
And so Kuniko, as soon as she gets out beyond the city, she works with Metal Age, and they've been digging a tunnel to get her out. They break into the juvenile detention area probably not even like 4 hours after she just escaped. She gets back, gets up above ground, and realizes that they've all been killed. And she's not too happy about that.
Oh, I bet she isn't.
She's not happy at all. But there are all kinds of other characters that are in the series. Kuniko's really mentor and protector is a named Momoko. And Momoko is a transvestite who had run a Kit Kat club called the Tropical Fish with her best friend Miku, who is also
a vestie.
Miku,
best friend vesties,
and Miku ends up actually winning the only lottery that you see a winner being selected for in the whole series, and goes to Atlas, and through some weird things that happen, she ends up becoming a servant to Mikuni. And Mikuni absolutely adores her. And Miku ends up doting on Mikuni more like a mom than like a servant.
Okay.
And it's a really cute, adorable relationship because, you know, it's a shim. So, like, you'd never have a child. You know you'd never have a child. But now, through this weird thing, you've ended up
having
a child that you're actually teaching, which I find to be really interesting, how to be more human and of the world as opposed to questioning what's actually out there in the world, because Mikuni has never been outside of her palace because she can't be exposed to light.
So, wait, could she not be exposed to the light of the moon either?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
So she's in this custom palace that has a light guard over the dome, so it's perpetually dark and night.
Holy crap. All right.
And then she's got, like, 50 handmaidens, and
because you know you need to have 50 handmaidens.
You gotta have them. You just have to.
Like, I need to have 75 handmaidens because I got a lot of shit that they gotta do.
Yeah. So then you have all kinds of other supplemental characters to each of these three, and the whole anime is just around how each of these sex interacts with Atlas, and really and truly what Atlas is,
right,
and what it's supposed to be. And I just find it to be really interesting. It's very deep, but it has some really nice moments of levity, and it's just a really good story. You have all these different perspectives that end up looping very simply around the core of the story, which is class shouldn't matter. Nations should just take care of their people. And
A message.
Yeah. It gets there. But it's really delivered gorgeously. The fight sequences are great. The animation style is really cool.
How's the pacing?
The pacing actually is good. You don't feel rushed at any point. Like, you don't feel in any episode that, oh crap, we didn't spend any time with, like, the Moon Palace people, so we'll just throw in this section right here and it makes no sense. It all paces out really well. It's a two-arc series, so there's, like, 20... I want to say there's 24 or 26 episodes. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm going to. I highly recommend it. Like, if you are done with the saccharine stuff for a while and you really are looking for something that's a little thought-provoking, that really and truly feels like an adventure that you're watching as opposed to just a series that has a plot. Because there's a lot of that in anime, right? You know that there are series that are like, here's the plot line, we're just going to explore it and go. And then you have other things where you really feel like you're watching an adventure unravel.
Right.
Shangri-La feels like you're watching a adventure unravel. And so I think it's a really great adaptation of the light novel. I've only read a couple of pieces of the light novel, but they really do a great job with staying true to the series. Now, I'm only aware of it being available on Funimation. Originally, when it aired in simulcast, Crunchyroll carried it, but you're talking back in 2010, so I don't know if it's still a series that's available on Crunchyroll or not, but you can definitely check and see. Shangri-La on Funimation is available both subbed and dubbed. For all of the episodes. I highly recommend, however, watching the subbed versions, because the character voice work just fits the characters a little bit more than the dubbed one. Although I will say I watched like 4 episodes in both the subbed and the dubbed version. The dubbed version isn't bad. It's not bad. They got right actors for the right characters. But I just prefer the subbed one, so that's me. But I highly recommend it. Definitely, definitely worth checking out. I'm probably going to finish it by the time you guys hear this episode.
Good.
Wow. Yeah, I'm almost there. We're getting close. So, I know that we're coming up on time there, but I know you had a couple of things that you wanted to rant about.
Well, I have like 12, but I'm going to choose one for right now, and I'll wait for the others next week because they're not going to change. But while this is prevalent in my panda mind...
It's in your panda mind?
Uh-oh. Guys, we need to talk about stuff, okay? Uh-oh. Like, I know YouTube is where you're supposed to be...
You want to talk.
We need to talk. We need to talk.
You gotta have a heart to heart. Get your cocoa.
Yep, get your drink ready, because... What is going on YouTube with this fucking new fad... The Harlem Shake Ninja. And I've been seeing it on Facebook, and people have been talking. Okay, stop.
Sorry. Con los terroristas. You can do the Harlem Shake.
Been talking about it, but no one's been linking any pictures, so I just thought, you know, oh god, maybe it's an imager thing or some new meme thing, and I realized,
you know, it was a you're the man now dog.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't pay too much attention to it because no one was showing me what it was.
I fixed it
until Ninja decided to correct that and share with me what this fucking Harlem Shake thing is.
It's a laugh riot.
And guys, girls of YouTube and the internet. One, I'm glad you're not planking anymore. Because some people have seriously died and hurt themselves planking. But you're not going to become famous from sitting in your living room. All of you are not going to become famous.
Okay, all right.
By sitting with 3 friends in your living room... Well, one of them with a mask on dances for 10 seconds. And then there's a horrible cut to you all doing God knows what the fuck
there's you're a doing. Lot of humping. There's a lot of humping in the show.
There's already too much humping on the internet. You've just added humping.
All right, here's the thing that I like about the Harlem Shake. Like, I've watched, like, three different compilations of what are, quote-unquote, the best Reprisal Harlem Shake videos out on the planet. And I have to say, first of all, to those people, thank you.
I mean, at least they used it in an interesting and...
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. There's a lot of penis copter going around
guys,
in the Harlem Shake videos.
Men out there who think it's going to be great to, you know, put a mask on and flop around in your boxers.
Strap it down.
If you've got more... If you've got more than...
Let's not call out numbers. Let's not call out... Just holster it. Just holster it. Just say it. Just
put on a banana hammock. You can still wear your boxers, dude. I don't need to see your snake slithering around. It is distracting.
It's not slithering at any minute.
And I have yet
bouncing.
To see like all female Harlem Shake with some boobies bouncing.
Oh no, they're too. They're too.
I know, but I haven't seen any yet.
I can link you to them.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I'm all about equal equality bouncing.
Yes, me too. Right. Bring on the titties.
But dudes.
And if you're going to wear a jog strap, put something over it. Don't sit with your jog strap.
No.
Because that one guy seriously was rocking an itty bitty and was rocking a jog strap and was still holding his like 2-bit junk. And I'm like, you don't even need to hold it. I can barely see it. You look like
a... See, there's mean Pandalicious again.
But anyway, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sure it was cold.
But here's the thing. You're sitting here complaining about it, but you got a big smile on your face the entire time. Because that shit's funny.
Here is my thing.
That shit's funny.
The song... From what I've heard, is infectious. So I understand why everyone feels that they need to be a part of this. But there's only so many videos of, you know, you in a library, you out in the snow, you with guns.
Look, I'm going to call it right now. PAX East, Boston, 2013. Let's make an epic Harlem Shake video.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think.
Let's
no,
do it.
See, here's.
Let's do it.
Here's what I want to be different if we can manage to pull this off. Because if you haven't seen the video, here's the formula. A small group of people, four, like say a five, four of them are doing everyday normal stuff, and one, preferably with a mask of some kind,
starts dancing.
Starts air humping and or sporadically dancing. There's no concept of rhythm or movement or passion.
Until
the bass drops, because it is a wub-wub song. Then, after the bass drops, usually there's a dramatic costume change for all people involved. There are far more people in the next shot, and they're all air humping, sporadically moving, having seizures, giving birth, slow riding on a tricycle. Or those lowrider bike things that some pimp gangsters sometimes have in video.
I just, every time I see one a new Harlem Shake video pop up, I immediately have Bounce Your Dick by Jenna Marbles play in the back of my head. I'm just saying.
Yep. Bounce that dick! And that's literally what's happening. But in ours, I would really like to play a reversal on that. So where...
No dick bouncing?
No. Dick bouncing, yes. But instead of the formula being, you know, the one person moving and no one moving and then everybody moving, I think the person who starts it should be deadpan in the middle, not moving. When the bass
You
drops.
Heard the girl.
Let's That's drop what I'd like bass. To see. Like, they be going all by themselves, and then when it flips over, that one person just, like, have this strange look on their face, while everybody else is just going gorillas.
You heard the plan. If you want to do a video before we get to PAX East, please do so and then link it to us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, so we can share it out with the world and help make you famous for like your 15 seconds. Because the video is only 30 seconds long, so that's
yeah.
really all you
and
need.
And I mean, granted, if you're in all the video, then it's 30 seconds of fame.
There you go. You got the whole thing.
Instead of 15. But I mean, if you come in the second half, then you're probably only getting 15 minutes of
fame. If you want to read about our thoughts and stuff on video games, tech gadgets, and anything else that pops up into our little heads, then you want to visit us online at egmnow.com/electricsisterhood to check out all the articles that we're putting together for your pleasure and also a little bit for our own. On our egmnow.com homepage. To catch new episodes of our podcast, you will find it always and forever at our podcast home, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can get the podcast off the website, but you can also get it in a bunch of different ways, either through the iTunes Music Store, the Microsoft Marketplace, or... you can hit us up using our short address, which is...
ESH.co. That is ESH.co. The short address will bunch in the long one. You can check out any articles that are written within the week. All questions and comments should go to our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/Landavesh.
Oh yeah, this podcast, we do it.
That's right. Every week we put out a brand new episode of our podcast, which you can find conveniently on Mondays in the iTunes Music Store, the iTunes podcast application if you're using a mobile device, or the Microsoft Store, again, on your Windows mobile device or on your Xbox or other Windows mobile capable device by searching out Electric Sisterhood and hitting the subscribe button. But if you're not living La Vida I or using a Microsoft Windows device,
then you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, we have friends you should be listening to, too.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that lives in the land of Esh. No. You can also check out episodes of the Boston Bass Brigade podcast every single Tuesday, co-hosted by our homeboy King Baby Duck. They're kind of the testosterone to our estrogen. You want to do and learn about stuff going on in video games and gadgets and movies and music.
And in the mind of men.
You want to then check them out. Again, Boston Bass Brigade on Tuesday. Follow that up with your nerd needs being satiated by our homeboy Deuces Wild over at geekagro.com. Thursday, guess what?
The issues guy and the issues program.
Gonna happen, going down. Panda's gonna teach him how to use the site.
You got issues,
now.
So does he. Let's all talk about him.
So, live show, you can call in, catch him on Ustream, all that good stuff. And for the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, there's all the stuff on our respective websites. There's all the stuff on the Twitters. If you want to check out everyone who makes up the Land of Esh, then visit my page, twitter.com/ninjasista, and check out the Land of Esh list. For all the news coming out of our camp, you want to make sure that you follow ESH News on Twitter.
ESH
We've got
News?
Facebook. I mean, we're every place. We're everywhere you want to be. So with that, I got to say, Panda.
Yeah.
What shit you digging this week?
Dude, I'm fucking digging The Walking Dead. I finally got caught up and I'm now in season 3, but I can't watch season 3 on Netflix or anywhere because it's not streaming and I'm not gonna watch AMC, on TV. But fuck yes, The Walking Dead. Everyone who told me I should have been watching this when it started was absolutely fucking right. And I'm a dick for not listening to you and I'm sorry. What are you digging this week?
I am digging Ricola.
Ricola!
And not because they sponsor this podcast, although if they wanted to, I'd let them. But it's because of Ricola that I'm able to talk as much as I am right now. So I'm digging Ricola.
See, I feel like Ariel from Little Mermaid could have gotten her voice back if she just had a Ricola.
Probably.
Or a Halls. No, a Ricola.
Yeah, seriously though, it's a Ricola. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out of here.
See you guys next week!
Deuces. Con los terroristas.
Harlem Shake.